the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Minneapolis departure, Archer 641, Charlie 2000, climbing 3000.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
Albert Delta, 3321, Mike, enemy downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast. Well, hello, and welcome to episode 26 Bravo of the In the Pattern Podcast. As promised, this is a continuation of episode 26 Alpha that was released last December. I wanted to quickly apologize. I know I promised this part would be out around New Year's, but due to life events such as my wedding in March, I was short on time for editing. But now that I have some time back, I wanted to go ahead and get this out for you guys before Sun and Fun. So really quickly, a couple announcements before we get started. We will be coming to you from Sun and Fun this year. I will be down in Lakeland from Wednesday morning through Sunday morning. We're going to go ahead and bring you daily episodes, again, like we did at Oshkosh, of what's going on around the field. So stay tuned to our feed for those. Also, I will be helping out again with Other People's Airplanes video podcast, and for the first time volunteering over at Sun and Fun Radio. So there's going to be tons of great content coming to you from both of those sources. So stay tuned. It's otherpeoplesairplanes.com, and the Sun and Fun Radio is going to be streamed live on liveatc.net/SNF, and that's liveatc.net/Sierra November Foxtrot. So there's going to be tons of great content coming to you from David Allen over at Other People's Airplanes, and also Dave Schaubetter and his awesome team at Sun and Fun Radio, who's going to be working long hours bringing awesome content to that feed. So go ahead and check those out as well. So without further delay, here's a continuation of episode 26 of the In the Pattern Podcast. Enjoy.
Well, let's move on. John, did you have anything? You've been busy moving and weathering storms and all kinds of stuff.
I've got all kinds of non-aviation stuff going on over here.
Did you just say aviation?
non-aviation. I tell you what, it's been crazy. I mean, with the move, we just moved into a new house. With the wedding coming up in approximately 4 months, it's starting to get into that.
There it is, huh?
excuse me, crazy time where I've got all kinds of stuff going on. So I'm not quite sure how much I'm going to get up this winter. Yeah, we did have the hurricane pop through, and then apparently they're starting to name winter storms now with Athena. I don't know what was up with that, but, yeah, I mean,
you said that,
I've been
that you just got hit with that nor'eastern. Is that what they called it?
No, we didn't get hit with it. No? North of us did. There was a possibility of getting some snow down here, but I saw some sleet in the morning, but that was it. It ended up just raining a little bit, but we stayed a couple degrees above freezing, so it didn't really do much. And then Sandy ended up being a kind of a no biggie as well. We got definitely a lot of rain. We did get a lot of wind, but the way the storm hit further north definitely helped us. At least where I am. And then I moved further west. So, we didn't get hit too bad. I also realized that after I moved, I'm approximately 20 minutes closer to Oshkosh.
So now instead of 15 hours and 20 minutes, you're just 15 hours. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's more like 16, 17, but,
it's a lot quicker by air.
Yeah.
You know, I really wish I could. I
No. He needs to drive. It's the only way I can get to Oshkosh.
True. I lug all the crap up there.
You guys fly into MSP, and then we'll take it from there.
There you go. Someone get their high performance and turbine, and we'll rent a Grand Caravan.
There you go. Hey, we might be getting an ovation at the club.
Oh,
yeah. Already got that.
We have an M20.
You did get that.
We bought the M20, and that's in, and it's. I haven't flown it yet, but
the Ovation's the big boy.
The Ovation's the big boy.
Yeah.
And so that we've been adding members like it's going out of style, and so we may need to buy another hangar and a couple more planes in 2013.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a good time to be in a flying club.
I just found out, I was watching the safety video. We have to watch quarterly safety meetings, and they tape them for us, and we can watch them online. But I was watching the last one, and the good news is one of the 172s, the one that went down in the Derecho, or whatever the hell that storm in July was called, that it took out what it took out a 152, T-41, and a 152, 141. The T-41 is gone. Air Force decided to just scrap the whole thing, keeping it as parts, and they're keeping the engine on hand, which is good for the club. And they're going to outright, instead of going through insurance, I think the Air Force is just going to pay for it. They're just going to give a chunk of money and buy the rest of the plane off the club or something like that. The 172 is back now, which is awesome. And I believe the 152 is back as well. So all our planes except the one are back now. The 172 that's been down for a couple months, because they were it came off for engine overhaul, and they found some metal shavings in the engine. That one, they're going to put a new engine in. They finally got the money for that. They are going to keep it as a 160 horsepower, though, and they're not going to do the upgrade to the 180 like the other two 172s. But the interesting piece of news, in addition to all the planes being back, is that now that they're down a plane, they're going to start looking at purchasing another one. And they said the probability was high that it was not going to be another Cessna.
Well, that'll be cool. It gets a little diversity in there for you.
Yeah, now we do have a, what is it, Aero Archer? It's the Aero is the complex, right?
Right,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have an Aero, but it looks like we might be getting another possibly low wing, something like that. So that'll be pretty cool, because I would love to fly something that's not a 172.
Yeah. So how many people do you know that are in the club? Do you know how many people are in that?
Over 300.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
For three airplanes?
Darn. No. It's nine. Oh. It was nine. Now it's eight. So here we have three 172s. We had three 241s, two now. And then three 152s and an Aero.
Okay.
I mean, the 152 is kind of worthless to me. I'm not even sure I could fit in the thing.
You can.
Much less find an instructor who will be able to fit in with me within the weight limit.
Jason Schappert teaches in a 150, and he's 6'3". I think you're all right.
Yeah, but he's also a twig.
Yeah, he's thin. You're not heavy by any means. You're doing
exactly. All right. That's
your instructor could be a cat.
That's kind of my problem, is the weight thing. It's trying to fit two grown men in a thing's a little difficult sometimes. Yeah. Now, and the ones we have, I kind of looked at them, but it was just kind of the 172s were available, but then they weren't. And a whole bunch of stuff happened. But we've got the three 172s that'll be back online now, the three 152s, and then the two T-41s, and then whatever the new airplane's going to be in the Aero.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a decent amount of planes. The problem is that a lot more people have been flying lately. And what also happened is, because there were three planes that were down, well, four planes have been out of service for a while. So since I was only eligible to fly a 172, I had one plane that I could fly. And most people in the club are flying 172s.
Mm-hmm.
So the availability, it was impossible to get a plane. Plus, you had a bunch of people, students and stuff, who were squatting times. So they would go in and, you know, because we could get in 2 weeks in advance. What would happen is a lot of them would start squatting times and then cancel it like 2 hours beforehand.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that does nobody any good. Mm-hmm. So they actually decided to put on a 24-hour cancellation policy.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
To kind of prevent that from happening.
So let me ask, John, now that we kind of know where you're, what planes you have, Brad and Chris, what are you guys checked out in that you can in your area?
I'll go.
Yeah.
We've got two Archers, a Warrior, an Aero, a Mooney, and a Cherokee 6. I'm checked out in everything except the Mooney and the 6. The 6 is offline right now. It got bent. Somebody
and the club bent it. I'll leave it at that.
Hopefully it's a minor bend.
Well, it's a wing and landing gear, and it's a pretty major bend.
So much for someone was putting it away in the hangar and touched it up against something. Okay.
Yeah, no, this was not hangar rash. This was starting the flare at about 25 feet.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
ouch.
Yeah. Anyway, so it won't be getting checked out in the six anytime soon. It's going to be out for a while. I don't know how long it's going to take them to get a new wing and get the whole structural assessment and everything done. The Mooney's next on the list for me to get rated on.
How much faster is that one than the Arrow?
The Arrow is about 130 knots true airspeed and cruise, and it stays that way up to about 10,000 feet, and then it starts to taper off. The Mooney is about 155 knots in cruise, so you get an extra 25 knots and basically the same fuel burn. I think it burns a little bit less. It's the same engine as the Arrow.
And the rental fee is the same or pretty close?
They don't know how to set up the fee for the Mooney yet. It'll take a while before they kind of figure out where it's at. But what they did to calculate it was they took the rate for the Arrow and multiplied it by the inverse of the difference in speed. So if the Mooney's 20% faster, it costs 20% more.
And kind of a weak way to do it, but
all right.
It's just enough to get a baseline. They've done this. The club's been around for 30 some years, and when they acquire a new type of aircraft, what they do is they kind of base it off of another aircraft until they have good metrics for it, and then they'll switch to a more accurate metric.
Well, that's good. At least they update it.
Right. It'll change. It takes a good 2 to 3 years while everybody gets checked out in it, and then just starts using it for its intended purpose. Which really the only reason you would take the Mooney is if you're going to go a very long way. It doesn't pay off if you're going 2 hours. If you're going to fly to Chicago, which is about 2 hours in the Mooney, it doesn't pay for time at all, because you're really only going to save 10 to 15 minutes on that kind of a flight. So it's one of those things where it's just as soon as everybody gets checked out in it and isn't just doing takeoffs and landings all the time, it's just going to be used for long haul flights.
Gotcha.
That's cool though. That's a neat plane.
Yeah.
For the money, a Mooney, for its speed and fuel burn is a good value.
It's a nice plane. It doesn't have a tremendous amount of load.
No.
And the fuel tanks aren't as big as the Arrow. But, like, I can throw a couple of people, two other adults into it, and be out to the Atlantic coast in about 5 hours.
Come on out.
Nice. So before I put my 2 cents in on the plane that I would love to have that I just saw, how about you, Chris? What else? I know you're obviously checked out in the Archer. Did I see that you got checked out in a 172 also?
So this is kind of a funny but good segue. I of course, you know, flew the Archer during all my training, so obviously that. And then I went and got checked out in some a 172, actually a couple different 172s by different instructors at different flight schools. The reason why I went to that second 172 because it was running for $95 an hour wet. So, but unfortunately, that one has now went away, and that instructor is now doing cargo flying in Alaska, I think, more or less full time. And he gave his 172 to a different flight school, and they're renting it for $130 an hour now.
Oh,
so
wow.
I will no longer be renting that 172. So I went back recently. This is kind of a funny story. So last Saturday, I was scheduled to fly. I'm going to take the whole family flying for only the second time since I've even had my license. We were going to go up to Sedona. So the first thing I did was went and scheduled the Archer because it was available. And then 2 days later, and this was like on Saturday or Sunday. So a week ahead of time, I scheduled myself for it. Then like on Tuesday, I shot an email over to Jackie, the instructor, and I said, hey, is 4Mike Alpha really available or is there still some issues? She goes, oh, we're waiting on a couple of two main tires, the front main tires for it, but I hope to have them. And she puts hope in capitals in 2 days. So that would be Tuesday. That'd be Wednesday, Thursday. I'm like, okay, no problem. Immediately I get online and I schedule myself a 172 over at AeroSim. That was the first place that I got checked out in a 172 at some time ago. And so I got myself checked out in that. So, you know, Friday comes and yeah, it's still down. Saturday it's down. So, no problem. Everybody get in the car. Let's go. We're going to go over to Glendale. So we get to Glendale and we pull up and there's no Cessna sitting underneath the tie downs or the T-shades. I'm like, oh man, maybe just somebody's late. So anyways, I go inside, and Zach, the CFI who checked me out in the 172 is in there and he's like, hey, what's up? I'm like, well, I got one of the 172s. I forget which one it was. Scheduled for 9 o'clock. He goes, oh, really? And I was like, yeah. He goes, let me check the schedule. So he gets online. He goes, no, I don't see you anywhere on here. I'm like, man, I scheduled myself on Tuesday. And I check. I go, well, maybe I made a mistake and I put myself down for Sunday. So we look, sure enough, not Sunday. But the 172 that I am wanting to rent is supposed to be back by now. So I'm like, but unfortunately, it's also spoken for at 11 o'clock. This was at 9 o'clock. So I wouldn't have time to get it and take it and bring it back all the way from Sedona by 11 o'clock. So we just, that wasn't going to happen. But there was a Piper Warrior 2 sitting there. He goes, well, you want to take the Warrior? I'm like, well, I guess so. I mean, I pretty much learned in an Archer, so it's pretty much the same plane. He goes, yeah, pretty much the same plane. So he goes, let me tell you about it. And he told me a few little squawks about it and gave me the keys, and I took the Warrior. No checkout.
Wow. Yeah, it's the same airplane with 20 less horsepower.
Yeah, 160 horse. Had a brand new 160 horse engine, and it's still running on the castor oil. Had brand new leather interior in it. But the panel was still old, and the paint was starting to fade or whatnot. I think it was a 69 Warrior II. But I thought that was really cool of him to, he knew I had my whole family, and he'd flown with me before, and he knew I've got the majority of my hours in an Archer. So I got to take the Warrior, and that was cool. He had a funny quirk about it, though, he says. And he said that he goes, now the charging indicator, the amp meter, he goes, sometimes it'll go to zero. I'm like, oh? He goes, yeah, but just cycle the alternator, just turn it off and then back on, and it should come right back up. I'm like, oh, okay. He goes, you might have to do that 7 or 8 times, he said. I'm like, okay. He goes, it's fine, believe me, it's no problem. I'm like, all right. So everybody gets in, we get all buckled up, we take off. I could not believe this 160 horse with 4 people, mind you, my wife and myself and my 2 kids. Now, my one daughter's 105 pounds soaking wet. The other one's maybe 120 or so. And then, plus me and my wife. And that thing jumped off the ground like you wouldn't believe. I was impressed for 160 horse. We were off the ground in 10 seconds, maybe less. So here we are cruising, and sure enough, before I even make it to Lake Pleasant, like, I don't know, 20 miles away, I already noticed that the alternator showing, or the charging is showing zero. So we flip the alternator off, then back on, and it goes up for, it goes to charging for a few seconds, then back off. We flipped that damn thing 50 times probably by the time we made it to Sedona. And I was like, well. And then once we got into the pattern at Sedona and I had a reduced RPM, it stayed showing charging the whole time. So I'm like, that's odd. And I know that, I made sure my wife knew that, we're not going to, the engine's not going to stop running. Worst case scenario, I'm going to lose my radio. I'll lose my lights, and I'll lose the, uh, transponder, but I have a backup radio, a handheld that I carry with me all the time anyway. So we're not really in that bad a shape. So, you know, we land and my concern was, is it going to start again? Right. And it started right back up. So I don't think their alternator is not the problem. It's the stupid gauge. It's bad. It has had plenty of power. I didn't lose anything. So anyways,
was it the kind of alternator that shows a charge, or was it the kind that just shows a load?
It's a gauge, and it goes from zero to, like, I don't know, 17 or something like that.
So that's showing you load. So yeah, if you turn stuff on and off, you'll see that gauge swing.
Maybe
like if you turn on the pedo heat, you'll see it swing way out to the right.
Mm. Okay.
So that's pretty normal.
That's a load indicator. Oh yeah, yeah. Just like that's what an ammeter does.
Right.
Yeah. Same thing. Like on the Archer, except for it's digital, and that don't work either. So I'm used to that. I'm used to that piece not working. So
that would freak me out. Losing the electrical system in IMC is like a major bad day.
Well, I could see all the way to Sedona from Phoenix as soon as I got to 6,000 feet. So. But since we're on the subject, so anyways, Mark, that's Archer, Cherokees, Warriors, and 172s now. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So the reason I'm asking is I'm just curious because I know we all fly different locations, and a couple of you guys are in clubs, and I was just curious at what the diversity was. Right now, I don't have a club local that I'm aware of, at least that. Short of renting from my school, and you know it's there's no incentive, honestly, as far as rates to rent from them.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go anywhere and get those prices. So there's, like, with a club like Brad knows firsthand, the rates that you get within a club is much better. Now there is a club at Beale Air Force Base, but I mean, you know, I have to drive 45 minutes to get there. And, you know, it defeats the purpose of me having to drive 45 minutes to get in a plane to fly an hour.
Yeah.
So, or whatever it is. So, but to save myself the money. So it's a function of the money. But what I was going to say is I was just reading the AOPA pilot, and the plane that they just picked up that I would love to win. I would take the loan out to pay the taxes on it in a heartbeat. But it's a debonair.
Yeah. C-33. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
what they're going to do to it is they're going to make this thing basically a 2013 Debbie.
Yeah.
All glass panel, all new leather, all everything. And my instructor actually owns a debonair, and I was poking around and looking at it. He's just doing some minor stuff. He just got it out of annual. And I was looking at his, and I'm like, this would be a perfect family plane. It's high performance. It's complex. It gets great true air speed. I think it's like 135, 140. It's not super economical, but it's not bad. We'll just say that.
It's about 12 gallons an hour, right?
Something like that. And I mean, the Archer that I fly at I think 85% is like 10.5. So it's, but I'm also doing 110 true. So I mean, there's that give and take. But he says that he gets it up at altitude, and he'll pull it back to about 65% power, and his economy just goes way up, and they're just cruising. He's got the long range tanks on his, which is, from what I understand, I think that Debbie that AOPA picked up, I think it has those tanks too. So, but I'm looking at it going, man, that would be an awesome plane to have. I've always been a big fan of the Cirrus, but I've you know, the cost between the two and maintenance and blah blah blah, just. But that Debbie, when I was looking at it and reading the article about it, I was like, you know, that would be a really cool plane to have.
That's what. So,
crossing my fingers.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hate to break it to you, buddy, but I'm winning that airplane.
that's what you think.
If you do, I'm coming out to fly it. How's that?
No problem.
That's what Jeb Burnside flies.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's got the one with the big boy engine in it. But yeah.
540.
Yep. He has a. This is a C-33.
I don't know. I don't remember his exact model number, but he's got the IO 540 instead of the 470.
Yeah. And that was the thing they were looking for in that article, is that they wanted, they didn't want the big engine. They wanted, I think, the 470. And because they're going to rebuild it, and I think they're going to do, they're going to do some custom engine work to it where they can, you can do, like, you know, in a car, you can port and polish.
Yeah, they'll do that.
And get more bang for your buck, but still have, you know, I think it's going to be well over 400 horse.
You'll do that and add fuel injection and electronic ignition. That's like, it's like a great performance increase on an engine.
And if you put the GAM ejectors on there, you can run lean of peak, and that saves you a lot of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy Keith with his Cirrus, he does that all the time. We'll go cruise, and he hits that thing lean of peak, and, you know, we're down to, normally he's at, you know, probably 14 gallons an hour. He'll go lean of peak, and we're down to like 10,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty cool.
Well, let me get back to the Sedona story. So I'm flying the whole family there, and I'm upset at myself because I broke my own rule when it comes to flying into Sedona. And my rule is that I only go there if I can land on 3 and take off on 2-1. And it's because of, it's on top of a mesa. We've talked about this before. Mountains all around, just updrafts and whatnot. And there's just been too many people having accidents coming in on 2-1. And running off the end of it, basically, because they can't get stopped or whatever. So anyways, I got them on the radio, and I'm listening for 25, 30 miles out, and everybody is taking off and landing on 2-1. And I'm like, what is going on? And I've got the weather, and the weather's like 3 knots. It's nothing. And the thing about that is that it's recommended to land on runway 3 with as much as a 10-knot tailwind.
Oh, wow.
It's just because it's still more safer that direction. Unless maybe you're in a tail dragger. I don't know. But that's even what my tail dragger buddy told me. So anyways, everybody's 2-1, 2-1, 2-1. There's so much traffic that I'm not going to butt in and ruin the flow of traffic and, you know, take a chance of a head on. So anyways, I go ahead and enter the downwind and do the pattern for 2-1. And it's, tell you what, it's much more spectacular and beautiful because you're a lot closer to the red rocks of Sedona when you come in this way. I'll have a video up later and you'll be able to see it, except for my wife is actually hand holding the camera, taking the video for me, and her eyes are closed for most of it. So a lot of it's of the dash and whatever else. So it's not going to be a fantastic video, but I'll preface it.
Need a couple of GoPros.
I know, right? So anyways, coming into land, and there is, before the runway, there's a gap, and then there's a mound or a small hill or mountain, whatever you want to call it, that you have to clear. Now, it doesn't look like, from at least my angle in the airplane, that it's any higher than the runway. If it is, just barely. But it's one of those subliminal things that I've got to be high to pass over this thing. You don't want to be too close to it. So anyway, so
it won't reach out and grab you.
No, I know. So I'm a little high coming in, and, you know, I've dropped all the flaps, and I'm nose down, and I'm 80 knots crossing the threshold. And I tell my wife, I go, don't worry, this is a plenty long runway. We got lots of runway. And I'm forcing this nose down like all I can do to get this thing on the ground. And then I go, or maybe not. She's like, what? then finally the airspeed got bled away. But it took me pretty much a good 55% of the runway before I was actually on the ground. Got it stopped with, you know, plenty of runway to spare, and turned off the taxiway nice and gently. But I'm not going to do it again. I just, you know, it's one of those things that I'd never practiced. So that was my first attempt at it. I could have gone around, I suppose, but I felt comfortable in my ability to get it down if I made it down before, you know, the 1,000-foot marker at the other end. I still had plenty of space. But I see why now that three is definitely the preferred runway. I don't know. I didn't like doing it. I don't really want to do it again, and I can't imagine someone doing it at night. So, anyways, everybody got out of the plane safe and sound. We went in and had some breakfast, and then boogied out of there and headed back to Glendale. We were about an hour late, but that's because the whole checking out the airplane, the 172 wasn't there, so we left a little bit late. But no big deal. No one had it rented before me. And it was $123 an hour, including fuel, is what it rented for. So not too shabby. Had a good time.
That's a good rate.
I shouldn't have broke my own rule. Maybe I should have. I don't know. Would you have suggested if like you knew that in your head, John or Brad, would you have like just chimed in from many miles out? Hey, why aren't we landing on three? Would you mind if I broke in there at three? You know, I don't want to land on 2-1. Or would you have just like went in there and just took a shot at it like me? And if it felt good, do it. If it don't, you can always go around. I mean, the nice thing about a go around and power and whatnot, that's the thing. My wife's like, are we going to have enough power? I'm like, well, the difference between flying and not flying is just a couple of knots. So when the airplane stops flying, you give it the gas and it'll pick up those few knots and you'll start flying again. But, you know, I don't want to scare the family from not going with me again. Not that they were afraid, but my wife didn't even want to take the yoke on the way up to even try it. I put her hands on the yoke for like, I don't know, 30 seconds so I could read the airport facility guide for a minute to make sure I was at what pattern altitude was and stuff. And she's like, here, please take it back. Please take it back. She's afraid any little gust of wind and we're going upside down.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I think my mom and my fiance did that.
My kids sitting in the back would be climbing over her to get in front seat and fly. They love it, but not so much for her.
Yeah.
So
I don't know what I would do in that situation, having not been in it, in that respect. I mean, we don't have those kinds of runways out here where there's just a massive cliff at the end of it. You know, I mean, Martin State, if I go off the end of that runway, which if you do, I mean, the thing is 6,800 feet. And you did something wrong if you go on the end of that runway and it's into like, you know, 5 feet of water.
You've messed up.
Yeah. Like I don't have any worries there. So I don't know.
The runway at up there is 5,100 feet, 5,132.
That's a long runway. But
what's the altitude?
Where are we at? 5,000 feet or so. 4,736.
Right. And on a non-standard day and da, 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 da.
Yeah.
I would personally, I would break in and, you know, let people know that runway 3 is the preferred runway for landing and that I intended to land on runway 3.
Yeah. Yeah. The worst case scenario, you get someone jabber back at you or whatever. I don't know. I always feel like I'm still always going to be the newbie. But
you'll be the newbie that's alive, and you know whose family walks away, and all of that stuff. I will take a little bit of abuse to increase safety for the family.
True. Yeah, I'm not out there to try and make friends with the other people in the air. I'm trying to land an airplane and keep my family safe. So, yeah. You know, if and when that happens again, I will. I'll definitely at least jump on the radio and talk to somebody about it. There's the Air Nav link, and there's a little picture of it from up in the air. And this is from that's from the point of view of runway 3 coming in and 2-1 being behind it. And from behind it, you can see that mound. It's a small picture, so it's kind of tough to see. But anyways, you'll see some other pictures and video later on after I get it edited.
Cool.
Other than that, I just want to say, you know, I've been missing one fly-in or another that's been going on here for months now. the Luke Air Force Base civilian fly-in, the first one in, I don't know, since 9/11 at least, they started doing these again. And I talked about it in the last episode. Luke Air Force Base had a civilian fly-in. You had to fill out some paperwork and get randomly selected. I had a bunch of my friends get selected and got to go to that thing, and they all got to fly the F-16 simulator and go up in the tower and just had a great time for a couple of days over there. So I missed that.
Edwards did that, I think, 2 years ago. They're going to try to do it every other year.
Yeah.
Same exact thing. Fill out your paperwork. They're going to background check you. Well, what was really cool is that you get to land on the dry lake.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. Yeah.
And there's only a very, very limited number of people that get to land on the dry lake. So they were supposed to do it again this year, but I have heard nothing.
Oh.
And the one person who's got his hand on the pulse of that is Darren Sorensen.
Yeah.
Who's a pilot at Nellis. And I was going to reach out to him and say, hey, have you heard anything? But I haven't had a chance to send him a message or anything yet. But see, something like that, you and I could probably, by the time that happens again, you and I could coordinate and maybe end up meeting somewhere.
Yeah. You know,
if we can't get on that list, but to hook up that somewhere like that.
That'd be a blast. So they said they're planning on doing this annually now. So if that's the case, it was a Wednesday, Thursday, or maybe it was a Thursday, Friday is what it was. So it wasn't a weekend thing. It was a Thursday, Friday. So I would have had to have taken off for work. And now I regret not taking off for work for something like that, for sure.
Hey, you take off.
I know, right?
I don't even get vacation and I would take off for that.
Then there was the AOPA summit in Palm Springs. I was really had that in my head that I was going to grab somebody and go fly down there to that. And then I just kind of talked myself out of it. Like, you know, there's no air show and really nothing's going on at the airport. You go to the airport and then you get bussed over to a convention center to see a bunch of booths, you know, vendors. So I kind of talked myself out of that one. So I guess I'm not too upset about that, but I'll have to try that some other time. Then a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, maybe it was three, there was the Copper State fly-in at Casa Grande Airport. I for 3 years now, I've been trying to get to that. And again, I missed it for one reason or another. Last weekend was the Scottsdale Airfare at Scottsdale Airport. And that wasn't really a fly-in. More or less, you could drive there, and they were having kind of an air show and a bunch of static displays and vendors and whatnot. But I can drive to that airport in like 30 minutes, so that's another one that's pretty close to me. So I miss those. But, however, this weekend, this Saturday, is the first ever – what's it called? Let me look it up. Glendale Wings and Wheels at Glendale Airport, where I rented the 172 and the Warrior from. Glendale Wings and Wheels. So it's a fly-in / drive your car car show. So it'll be a car show and airplane show at Glendale Airport this weekend on Saturday, with pancake breakfast and everything at the restaurant. So I do plan on going to that tomorrow. I should have a nice prize in the mail. My Canon T3i DSLR should be in the mail and delivered according to UPS. We'll see if it makes it here.
I hate you.
I assume.
I hate you. I really hate you.
It wouldn't help me at all. That.
Let me tell you about this deal I got.
You got Costco something. Right?
No, you know specifically how long I've been looking for one of these things. I've been talking about it since last Oshkosh, right?
Same as me.
Yeah.
We had this same discussion.
Right.
Well, and you got one, and now I hate you.
I've been hunting for a deal on one on a DSLR.
Why am I getting free? I can afford these things.
I know, right? So finally, I found this deal. So it was the T3i, the body, plus the standard 18-55mm kit lens that comes with it, and then it also had the 55-250mm zoom lens with it, a 16 gig class 10 SD card for it, and a case, and a Canon PIXMA 9000 model photo printer. Now, this whole kit was $1,000, but it came with a $400 Amex gift card as a rebate. So the kit's essentially $599.
Wow. That's impressive.
I was like, all right, I'm sold. Like, and the thing is, it was from B&H Photo, which is in New York. I order it, and then they get hit with the hurricane. So then my camera's floating down, you know, the street or something. No, actually, I ordered it.
I'll pick it up for you.
It was already on back order. So I was ordering something they didn't have, but they said they were going to honor it. And sure enough, they did. They got it in, and they mailed it out a few days ago. So cool. Hopefully it really does come tomorrow so I can practice with it over at Glendale on Saturday. I'm not going to bother flying over there from Deer Valley. It's 11 minutes from wheels up to wheels down. I've already done that one.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, one other thing. I grabbed my friend and we grabbed four Mike Alpha, the archer, over at Deer Valley, and flew over to Pinal Air Park, which is south on the way to like Tucson. So I get to Deer Valley and Franz, my buddy is already there. I'm like, where are you at? He's like, oh, come over to Atlantic Aviation. So I'm like, all right. So I go over there and he's over in the hangar at Atlantic Aviation, hanging out with, Precious Metal, the P-51 Mustang. Did I talk about this already on last episode?
No.
I don't think so. Yeah, Precious Metal, the P-51 Mustang, was just flying through. He had stayed the night here on the way back from the Reno Air Races. And for those of you that don't know, Precious Metal, it's an all-polished aluminum P-51 Mustang with counter-rotating props. The only P-51 Mustang in the world like it. And it's running a 12-cylinder Rolls-Royce engine. So it was there. It was pretty cool. We looked at it, yada, yada, yada. We took off and flew to Pinal. 800 number. We flew down to Pinal. Now, Pinal Air Park is kind of interesting because there's a whole bunch of airliners kind of mothballed there. And a whole bunch of military helicopters are sitting around there. All kinds of, you know, helicopters from different variants, but all military. And just, you know, one airliner after another sitting out in this, like, boneyard, just mothballed up. And then there's a whole bunch that's being refurbished. I think they turned some of them into cargo. And Evergreen, you guys are familiar with Evergreen? They have 747 water bombers. So those are hangared out of there as well.
That's the competition to my brother-in-law.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My brother-in-law is the flight engineer on 10 tanker, the DC-10.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Those are pretty interesting. I'm coming in and I'm landing. And as I'm landing, we see a C-17 Galaxy on the taxiway at the end of the runway. So
hard to miss.
I decided not to use any brakes, and we rolled clear out to the end of the runway and took the taxiway nearest to the C-17 and cruised by him real slow. And as we're pulling up, the cargo door in the back is coming up. So I'm like, oh, cool. Either they have something we don't want to see, or they're getting ready to leave, you know? So we cruise by him real slow and then head on down. We're just putting down to the other end of the runway to take back off again. Then he gets on the radio and says that he's getting ready to taxi. So I just immediately pull over and stop the airplane, turn it off, and we get out and wait for him to go by and wave and take some pictures, and took some video of him taking off and stuff. And he was dropping jumpers. I can't imagine a more expensive way to drop 8 people out of an airplane than a C-17. Globemaster.
Your tax dollars at work right there.
I know. I was like, are really 8 people? 8 people you're going to let out of this thing. Oh, my.
No, they're only burning about 6,000 pounds of fuel.
Whatever. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, come on.
I doubt that's the most expensive jump.
Yeah.
I said, especially considering what Felix just did a couple weeks ago.
Who was that? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Felix Baumgartner.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, he He had a few sponsors along the way, I suppose.
That's true.
Mr. Red Bull. But speaking of that, did his capsule look like a helmet to you?
Yeah.
It looked like a helmet to me, but I don't know if that's the way it was meant to be designed or if that's just the way I took it. Anyways, so we flew down there, and then it's fun because, you know, we did the, you know, Bravo transition from Phoenix, and that's always fun. And then headed back again, did the Bravo transition, and it was super busy. I mean, there was planes all over the place. Matter of fact, Phoenix stayed on with us, even though we were outside the Bravo going, I'm just going to stay with you. It's really busy. Just to point out traffic for you. I'm like, that's cool, dude. Thanks. You know? And
yeah, that's nice.
And he's spotting people for me left, right, and center. Like three people. He's like, okay, here's one at 1 o'clock. All right. Got it. All right. There's another guy at 11, 1,000 feet below you. Got it. You know, it's like just spouting them off. So that was awesome. Anyways, land back at Deer Valley, get out, and we go look over at Atlantic Aviation. Sure enough, the P-51's still there. So we go back over there, and now the pilot, Tom Richards, there. So he's getting ready to leave and everything. So we talked to him for a while. I got to help push the P-51 out of the hangar with some other guys. So I talked to Tom. Here's some stats on that plane, he said. They take off with only 50% power. Which is
wouldn't want to torque roll it.
No, no. And then in cruise they only use 25% power. My planes I fly won't even stay aloft with 25% power.
You also don't have a 2,000 horsepower Merlin up in front.
at 25,
or the gas bill.
Yeah.
Well, or the gas
bill. So here comes that part. So at 25% cruise, that gives them 315 miles per hour true airspeed. And he's burning 75 gallons an hour at that. All right.
Oh. But if you do the math, I mean, you know, divide his speed by three to get down to an Archer, and the fuel burn isn't all that bad.
And then at full power, like when he's racing, it's gulping down a mighty 320 gallons per hour. But that's okay because the race is over in 8 minutes. But that's incredible. On top of that, the amount of oil that he has to carry on board and water and alcohol is incredible. That's a lot of fluids on board that plane once they're flying. But that was really cool. I've got a cool video up on YouTube of it being started up in front of me, and with those chrome counter-rotating props spinning at you, it's a real neat sight.
I'll bet.
That's cool.
It was amazing the range that those planes had when they were in active service in World War II. I mean, those were long-range aircraft.
Yeah, like 1,000 miles, right?
1,000 miles each way. Yeah.
Incredible. And you're like going, really? It holds enough fuel to do that at that fuel burn?
Well, they had different engines.
Yeah, they had different engines, and they had external fuel pods.
Yeah, but they also carried weapons and bombs. Sure. So
yeah,
they had that too.
Yeah, every time they shot the gun, they would gain speed and lose weight. So that's nice. What else? You guys heard about the mid-air collision over here around Chandler back in October?
I think so.
Did you hear about that, John or Mark?
Our listeners might not have.
So there was a mid-air collision with one of them was a Cherokee and the other one was a Warrior. Okay, whatever. They're both Cherokees. One of the pilots on board, we all know. It was Gabrielle Palmas.
Really?
Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yeah. Gabby was in a IFR flight with an instructor. And they were out in that practice area, and that practice area is super, super busy. And sure enough, a plane clips them. And I'm going to just shoot you a link right there, and you'll be able to see the plane. That's her plane in the picture that you'll see. It's missing 3 feet of its right wing.
Oof.
Wow.
Now, including most of the aileron, almost the entire aileron. I'm sure it didn't
work. Which you could imagine what if it worked at all, right?
Right.
But both planes made it safely to the ground. One of them landed back at Gila River Memorial Airport. which was close by, and the other one landed at a vehicle test track that Volkswagen uses. I got up here in front of me the prelim NTSB report, and it just basically says on October 5th, 2012, about 14:15 Mountain Standard Time, a Piper PA-28-161 Warrior and a Piper PA-28-201 Arrow. Oh, it's an Arrow, not a Cherokee. Collided mid-air approximately 12 miles south of Chandler, Arizona. Both airplanes were being operated under the provisions of Title 14 Code of Federal Regulations, CFR Part 91, as local instructional flights. Each airplane had a certified flight instructor and student pilot. No injuries were reported from either airplane. The Warrior departed Chandler Municipal Airport, Chandler, Arizona, about 13:35. The Arrow departed Falcon Field, that's in Mesa, about 12:30. Visual meteorological conditions prevailed for the flight. No flight plan was filed for either airplane. According to the CFI of the Arrow, he and the student pilot had just completed a non-directional beacon interception exercise. Shortly after, the CFI noticed a very close, fast, blurred object approaching from almost directly ahead. The object seemed to be in a left turn and was lower than his plane. The CFI of the Warrior reported that he had given his student pilot a simulated clearance. The CFI then saw an airplane directly ahead and slightly higher in altitude. He further said that the airplane appeared to be in a slight left turn. He took the controls and made an abrupt nose down left turn prior to impacting the other airplane. After the mid-air collision, the Warrior landed at Gila River Memorial Airport in Chandler with substantial damage to the right wing. The Arrow landed on the test track at the Volkswagen Group of America in Maricopa, Arizona, with substantial damage to its left wing and horizontal stabilizer. It was just a miracle, and by God's grace, that these things made it to the ground without having two fatalities on our hand.
Oh, there'd be four fatalities, but yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Four. Yeah. I've been looking on Gabby's podcast to see if she's talked about it. I don't think she has an episode up with it, but I am sure it will be a part of it here pretty soon.
Yeah, and
she may wait until the NTSB report and the FAA stuff gets cleared, though.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I will say this. I mean, props to her. She's back in the air training again.
Yeah.
Dude, she went up back 2 days later or something.
Yeah, she went up pretty quickly. And, I mean, that's pretty incredible. Coming off something like that, especially.
Right.
Absolutely.
So.
And you,
I'm very glad she's okay, though. That I saw that on Twitter, and I was like, oh, wow.
And again, for our listeners, what is her podcast?
She's Hangar Flying, which is there's two names for it, Flying Podcast or Hangar Flying Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. We can add that information into the show notes along with the other information.
Yep. Definitely.
Anyways.
I think probably coming to the end here.
Yeah, we've been jabbering for quite a bit. It's been great to get Mark back on the horn here with us and get caught Woo-hoo. Up with him. Thank you so much, Mark. Glad you're back with us.
I'm so glad to be back, to be honest.
Oh, great man. To hear your voice.
It is great to hear you getting ready to wrap it up and
oh, yeah.
just enjoying it.
As much as...
I'll be stressed out and hitting you guys up for tips and about the oral and the practical that's coming up pretty quick too. So I'm excited.
Not too bad.
You know what, Mark, as exciting as getting that solo out of the way is and doing it, since I've had my ticket, I've never flown solo. Matter of fact, I look for someone to fly with every single time. It's just, to me, it's not near as much fun unless you can get some other people grinning and having a good time with you.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I agree. I think so. Yeah, my short cross country by myself. I got about halfway, and I'm like, okay, I had it all trimmed out and level, and I'm kind of bored.
Now what?
This is great, but I'm kind of bored. I don't have anybody to talk to.
Exactly.
But
anyway. Stomach approach. What are you guys up to?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Someone talk to me.
Yeah. Anywho, no.
Let's Let's stick a fork in this one. Let's how about some shout outs?
I totally will start this one here. Number one, a quick shout out to good friend of mine, Corey, who just got his private pilot. I want to say a month or two ago. Congrats to him. It's been another one who's kind of been a long time coming. So that is awesome. Another friend of mine just got his commercial. I know he's going for a CFI, and I'm kind of waiting for him to do that so I can do my VFR here in a couple months. So shout out to him. Also, I know that we're getting, it seems kind of dangerously close to Open Airplane being live. I haven't heard anything recently about that. The fact that they were, was it AvWeb picked them up?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there's been several big articles out about them, so it's got to be getting close.
Yeah,
there's ripples in the water. It's almost like there's ripples in the water that it's quiet, which means things are really starting to happen, I believe.
Yeah. Well,
and Rod Rakic right now is out with Civil Air Patrol in New York doing FEMA work.
Oh, he did go over there.
Yeah, which is cool.
That's awesome.
Shout out to Rod. Did you see the plane that they're taking?
No. It's an ugly van looking thing.
it's like a shorter version of a caravan except for piston driven.
Is it like a 206?
No, here I'll tell you what it is. Because
I think I know what you're talking about. It's boxy as hell, right?
Yeah. It looks like a caravan, but it's like its baby brother.
Here it is. It's called a Gippsland. It's Gippsland. GA8 air van.
Oh, GA8 air van. Okay.
Which is funny because I didn't think that we didn't have anything in Civil Air Patrol that was an Cessna, a 172 or a 182. I swear, because we just talked about this at one of our meetings. It's like the entire fleet is a 182 or a 172, and with the exception of maybe one or two that are still floating out there, like that one that ships them.
So, yeah, this is like an 8-person caravan is what it looks like.
So that's what's keeping him busy, probably putting the slowdown on Open Airplane.
Yeah, but I do know that they projected what the end of the year, if I'm correct.
That's the last I heard was yeah, December was an ETA.
But either way, keep an eye out for that because I'm really excited about it and I know it's coming soon.
Yeah, that will be a game changer right there.
Might get me up flying again.
Whatever it takes.
I had two shout-outs. One was for Excelsior Springs Airport in Excelsior Springs, Missouri, 3 Echo X-Ray. Just a gem of an airport, and there's a couple that are trying to refurbish it and really make it kind of bring it back up to its glory days. And just want to wish them the best of luck, and if you're like me and Kansas City is kind of halfway between where you are and where you want to be, it's a great place to land, and they've got really cheap fuel. That was one. My other shout out was for Drew Grider. Drew turned 16 and soloed on his 16th birthday, except that he soloed on his 16th birthday at 12:02 a.m. So his first solo was a night solo.
And how many planes did he solo?
Well, he led a three-ship formation, and then he soloed, I don't remember the type, but he soloed a single engine, and then he also soloed a multi-engine.
Uh-huh, and a glider that day. Of course, he had already been doing gliders, but he flew three planes that day.
One of them.
Multi-engine solo?
Yeah, I know.
As a student pilot?
I know.
Now his dad.
Where do these kids come from?
His dad teaches DC-3.
Well, all right.
That's cheating.
That is cheating. Total cheating.
Yes.
So I'm jealous.
Why he's able to get enough stick time in a multi. Now he didn't solo the DC-3.
Yeah. If he did that, I'd probably drive out there and choke him personally.
Well, the FAA would have drove out there and choked him because he can't fly a plane with a gross weight over 12,500 pounds on a student certificate.
Yeah, well, there's all that.
You get a type rating before you get your pilot's license, private pilot's license.
So yeah, congrats to Drew. That was a heck of an accomplishment. I watched those videos. I was had my jaw on the ground watching that. Our buddy
Steve Tupper.
Yeah, Steve Tupper was there taking the video for us.
Cool. Mark, you got anything?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and jump in. First and foremost, I'll give a huge shout out to Dennis Pearson, my friend and owner of the school. Without his generosity, there's no way I'd be back at this right now. So that's my number one. Another shout out to my buddy Keith, the Cirrus owner. About a month, it's maybe six weeks ago now, he passed his multi-engine instrument and commercial rating. So he's cruising right along with all of his ratings. So huge shout out to him. And that's pretty much it for me.
For me, I just want to give a shout out to my whole family for coming along for only the second family flight we've ever got to do together. It's just tough getting us all on the same schedule with my wife working nights and my older daughter, you know, almost 18. And so she's busy all the time, if not with her friends, with working or with school. And with that in mind, there's probably not going to be too many other times that we'll actually get to do this as a family with her, you know, going to be in college soon and stuff. So shout out to them, and shout out to Zach over at Aerosim Aviation for, you know, helping me out with getting me up in the Warrior 2. That was cool.
Cool. Let's go ahead and go through each of us real quick where you can find us online. Chris, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter most of the time, and I am CHOLABAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. That is also the same name. You can find me on YouTube. And, of course, Chris at InThePatternPodcast.com for an email.
You can reach me on Twitter at Brad Kane. That's Bravo, Romeo, Alpha, Delta, Kilo, Oscar, Echo, Hotel, November. And or you can reach me at Brad at InThePatternPodcast.com.
And Mark.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as Student Pilot Mark. You can find me at Mark at In the Pattern Podcast, and various other social networking places. I can't think right now, but I'm just glad to be back on the air.
So, are you ready to change that?
I cannot wait to change it. I haven't figured out what I'm going to call it yet. My new name will be, but I will change it.
Cool. It's coming soon. And well, lastly, you can find me generally on Twitter at Pilot Conway when I'm not cut off from the internet, which happens a lot. I'm also John at InThePatternPodcast.com. And if you happen to be one of the five people that's probably on app.net, I'm also Pilot Conway on there as well. For all of the podcasts, you can reach all of us at podcasts at InThePatternPodcast.com, on our website at InThePatternPodcast.com. We also have Twitter, Google Plus at InThePattern. You can like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/InThePatternPodcast. If you'd like to, you can go to our homepage. We have a new mailing list. If you'd like to stay updated for all the new episodes, we promise they'll be coming out soon. There is a box on the right-hand side of the page where you can put in your email address and sign up for that. Finally, if you'd like, you can leave us a voicemail or, I guess, a text message if you'd like at 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01. We look forward to hearing from you.
I think that'll take care of it. Episode 26 of the End of Pattern Podcast is officially in the can.
And with that, I'm going to say that wraps up episode 26 of the In the Pattern Podcast. We'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
The Voices in Your Head.com.
where could you find us if you were trying to find us on the internet?
Oh, damn it. No, now I've clicked away from my show notes. I can't read them.
We're going to have to do some editing on this one. I apologize, everybody. This one's going to take a little longer to get out.
Oh, no, it's not. Not longer than any of the other ones. Come on. Let's be realistic. We're on a 3-month lead time.
All right. Well, with Oshkosh coming up, why don't we just talk about our plans for Oshkosh
13? No kidding, huh? All right.
I'll be there.
I've been recording for 2 hours and 6 minutes. Let's see if we can get this last part wrapped up in 5.
Okay, so
Brad, we'll get you out of the way real quick.
Sure. I used to think that you could find me on our website, but that's not the case. So
I changed that, didn't I?
Not lately.
Didn't I update that?
Let's take a look.
I thought I did. If I didn't, I will do it now, and it will be done by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah.
Are you on there?
No.
All right. Well, since we went over this last time, I'll put it on there.
All right. Well, in the extremely unlikely event that John doesn't put it up there,
Bammy Wham!